Please welcome bienvenidos. Hola, aloha, ni hao, namaste, konnichiwa, bonjour, buongiorno, sawadee kerup, guten tag, jiao weevi va kat bang, half a day, jai janendra, salam, shalom, peace, now, go vegan, peace how, go vegan, from the left coast of the unlabeled, genetically mutated McNugget pharmaceutical vivisection prison killitary industrial corporation in the cheese-covered post-constitutional bankster bankrupt corruptocracy mocracy criminocracy of the United States of Listeria, foodborne in the NRA, NSA, USA, home of Uncle Salmonella, where they sure do eat a lot of dead animal body parts, and the Wall Street-backed corporate diet of death, disease, and destruction is shoved down your throat. This is Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden, now broadcasting for 12 years, as heard on the Air America Radio Network, CBS and Clear Channel radio stations, iTunes, TalkStream Live, Stitcher.com/GoVegan, live Sundays, 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. Pacific Time, and archived at GoVeganRadio.com, and nationally syndicated by the Genesis Communications Network, and happy Labor Day weekend. This is the weekend we celebrate work, by staying away from it because, well, we hate our jobs, right? As, you know, Maynard G. Krebs on Dobie Gillis used to say, work, yeah. Yes, it is doing something so distasteful, you know, that somebody has to pay you to do it, you know? I mean, McDonald's workers, McDevil's workers hate their jobs because, well, they're working at McDonald's, you know? They were on strike this past week. I mean, they couldn't even wait for Labor Day to stay away from their jobs. I mean, they're asking for a pay raise, so they don't have to eat at McDonald's anymore, you know? Although these days, you know, maybe people should be thankful for having a job. You do only have two choices right now, NSA spy or McDonald's worker. And I'm not quite sure which is more prestigious. You know, working at McDonald's, really at any slashed food dump, comprising the axes of evil, you know, McDevil's, Murder King, and Wendy's, Kills Jr., Jack the Ripper in a Box, Kentucky Fried Chicken, Taco Hell, Dead Lobster, Outbreak Steakhouse, Up Chuck E. Cheese, Skin and Snout, that's what a hamburger is all about. Working in a cutthroat dying industry will never be prestigious, and the pay, you will be paid accordingly, you know. After all, you are serving the corpse of a murder victim on a bun. You know, here, have another bite of the unfortunate. What a happy job this is. Here, eat the unfortunate. I mean, you think it's bad working at McDonald's, you know, think about some of those McDonald's workers, how bad they have it. They wind up as sandwiches, and, you know, the other workers want $15 an hour to serve them. Now, I don't know if it's that I'm, you know, that aged where my first jobs were at minimum wage and they were just such low pay. I mean, I remember they were like about $3 an hour. So, I mean, I don't know. McDevil's workers want $15 an hour to serve the dead animal. $15 an hour? What are they, attorneys? I mean, I don't get it. That's, you know, that's a lot more than other McDevil's workers get. You know, the ones in food preparation, getting, you know, the initial ingredients together. You know, the professional throat slashers who stab the terrorized, innocent, harmless animals who become those Happy Meals. In 2012, there were 485,170 workers in the animal slaughtering and processing industry, meaning 485,170 cases for, you know, psychological rehab. You know, there is the biggest turnover. pretty much 100% a year. So slaughterers and meat packers averaged $12.03 per hour. These are the different categories. Meat trimmers average $11.44 an hour. Butchers average $13.46. Freight and stock, so-called stock handlers average $12.08 per hour. Quality control workers, whatever they get, they're overpaid, right? They're getting $13.54 an hour. And packagers average $10.95 an hour. So, you know, these jobs, I mean, really, who wants these jobs? I mean, there's actually the job description. I see this is an actual job description for, let's say, you want to be a slaughterhouse cleaner. So, you know, out there on the internet, you find the slaughterhouse cleaner. Slaughterhouse cleaners are expected to disinfect and sanitize the building in which animals are killed for consumption. Given the nature of the bodily fluids being spilled inside such buildings, the cleaners must adhere to strict guidelines that clean not only dirt and grime, but kill and dispose of germs, fungal agents, and mold. The job keeps the new cuts microbe-free, supposedly, and, you know, on and on it goes with that description. So, does that sound like a good place to get food? Does that, you know, I mean, it's filthy. Talking about the process hygiene, also in the job description here, it says one of the primary functions of a slaughterhouse cleaner is to sterilize the equipment in between uses. This includes hooks, countertops, knives, and cutting tools. How violent can you be? Oh, and countertops. Look at all the warnings you get. Those radio spots from the Ad Council telling you to make sure you clean countertops carefully and you don't mix, you know, animal products on cutting boards with vegetables. And so anyway, here's one of those prime jobs, cleaning the hooks, countertops, knives, and cutting tools, the grinders, and other meat processing equipment. What cruel equipment this is. It sounds like a concentration camp. You got to clean the concentration camp to effectively clean these apparatuses. It says here, the worker must dismantle the machinery and disinfect each piece individually using cleaning agents such as bleach and vinegar, making sure to thoroughly rinse and dry. We're trusting people, you know, who are not getting paid a lot, who are in a very dangerous job that they hate. Slaughterhouse cleaners might also be responsible for the disposal of hazardous fluids coming from the carcasses. Yummy. I'll take two of those sandwiches. They must trap grease and fat, separate the blood, and screen the solid waste. Yummy, yummy. Mommy, can we go to McDonald's now? It is Labor Day weekend. Oh, one more chance to spread those carcinogens among family and friends via barbecue. Last week we talked about the Bacon Festival in San Jose with the studies linking processed meats such as bacon to cancer. Well, hot dogs are also processed meats, so the same applies. You know, T. Colin Campbell saying 90% of fatal degenerative disease. T. Colin Campbell of Cornell University, the China study, the largest study of diet and health ever. 90% or more of fatal degenerative disease caused by animal protein and not much of it. And also that University of Hawaii study showing a 67% increase in pancreatic cancer. That applies to hot dogs also. Also the study on colorectal cancer risk. And Harvard University, you know, with processed meats, hot dogs also would interfere with insulin production and use for diabetes and all. So, if you are unsure that your family is getting the recommended daily dose of carcinogens, well, that's why you have that grill there, right? You know, to add more carcinogens to your carcinogens, as grilling flesh creates HCAs, compounds that are carcinogenic in themselves. So, supporting and ensuring the growth for labor and laborers in the oncology industry. I'm telling you, there are so many people who are employed by animal exploitation, animal abuse, the basis for so much labor, so much of this economy, and the lowly paid, the low-paid, lowly McDonald's workers, just the tip of the manure mountain popping through the poop lagoon. Remember that Happy Meal or vegetarian wrap now supposedly, I don't know why Veg News makes this big deal about McDonald's Canada reducing two new vegetarian wraps. One of them has feta cheese and creamy sauce, and the other one has jack cheese and cheddar cheese. So, really why Veg News is so excited about two new animal products being released at McDonald's in Canada. No big deal to me. A big deal to the animals who suffer, of course, and the people who will wind up with the cancer and heart disease and the environmental devastation. So many workers in the animal abuse labor economy. I mean, everyone, who's clearing the land, right? Everyone from, clearing the horses, the coyotes, so that your future hamburgers can graze there. And then you have, the refrigeration, transportation industries to transport all the death, and the vivisectors in the laboratories killing millions of animals every year. The same thing that happens to the hearts and souls of slaughterhouse workers happens to those vivisectors as they look in vain, they search in vain for the cure to the diseases of eating those McDevil's hamburgers, in the first place, So, but they make a lot of money in the animal exploitation economy. You have the whole heart disease industry, totally useless industry if everybody were to go vegan, as Dr. Esselstyn says, all of that heart disease industry, oncology, all financially lifted by the work of the poor McDonald's employee, who's really, I guess maybe is the backbone of our economy. Maybe that McDonald's employee does deserve the $15 an hour after all, considering, how he or she does contribute to, so many other industries. The dialysis machine maker, owes, should be supporting higher wages for the McDonald's worker. Every ambulance driver, every heart surgeon, every double-wide coffin maker. Anyway, all right, it's Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. Coming up on today's program, we will talk to Thomas Micklewright of the Vegan Society in London, and also to Kathy Stevens of the Catskill Animal Sanctuary. It is Go Vegan Radio, goveganradio.com. It's Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden, goveganradio.com. If you are in the San Francisco Bay Area, you are very lucky to have one of the great restaurants in the world, Vegetarian House. Yes, they're using the word vegetarian when it still meant, vegan. Vegetarian House is a 100% vegan restaurant. I love Vegetarian House. I love the San Francisco Vegetarian Society. It's been that now for 45 years. But when McDonald's introduces new vegetarian meals that have feta cheese and jack cheese and creamy sauces and all, it's, what's happened to the word vegetarian? Well, if you want great vegan catering in the Bay Area, Vegetarian House is the place for you also. The restaurant at 520 East Santa Clara Street, everything organic, non-GMO. You can check out the menu at the website, and a lot of companies around the Bay Area are having Vegetarian House cater for them. If you have a wedding coming up, you will love the food, so check it out. It's vegetarianhouse.us. So I'm wondering what What defense or revenge do the animals actually have whom you eat, you know, for, you know, the ones that you eat, the, what's the revenge for their imprisonment, the torture and killing, you know, the gentle cows and pigs and chickens, so harmless, you know, the, certainly there must be consequences for bloodthirsty human behavior, right? I mean, you know, they didn't want to do it, but, you know, flesh eaters, dairy consumers, fish and egg eaters are all killed as part of the massacre. You know, we mentioned the heart disease, cancer, stroke, diabetes, all penalties of the war on animals. And now we have the recently breaking news on animals fighting back against meat-eating terrorists unleashing germ warfare, you know? I mean, we're against all this chemical weaponry, germ warfare. Well, that's what the animals use on us. Beware the potential MRSA epidemic. I mean, this is so important. If you are a parent, it's time to wave the white flag in this war on animals, you know? Wave the white flag at cow flesh burgers and dairy. Enough is enough. Give it up. Surrender. Surrender to soy milk and almond milk, rice milk, hemp milk, coconut milk, anything but cow's milk. You know, a new study from the American Society for Microbiology published in the journal MBIO, says that each year about 90,000 Americans suffer invasive MRSA infection. About 20,000 die. Many are children. Did you hear what I said? MRSA is shown to have originated in cows. All of these deaths, you know, so is it really responsible now for a parent to give his or her child a cow flesh hamburger, steak, cow's milk, cheese, ice cream, yogurt, butter, you know? 20,000 deaths. 20,000 deaths. So it looks like the infectious diseases in humans often originate in other animals, and it looks like the newer, more evolved strain of the MRSA bacteria that has been causing increased infections in humans for the past 15 years is connected to a strain of bovine origination. This strain has developed a resistance to antibiotics, in addition to other new characteristics after human transition. So, I don't know, it's if you munch on the bovine corpse or sip the nipple drippings of bovine mammary glands, you may want to know the symptoms of the MRSA infection. Usually start with small red bumps looking like pimples, boils, or spider bites, and they can quickly progress into deep, painful abscesses requiring surgical draining. MRSA bacteria can burrow deep into the body, causing potentially life-threatening infection of the bloodstream, lungs, bones, joints, surgical wounds, and heart valves. So those are some of the dangers of MRSA. Is it really worth it for the children to have any dairy at this point, huh? I don't think so. All right, it's Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. Coming up, we will be talking to Thomas Micklewright of the London Vegan Society. It's Go Vegan Radio, goveganradio.com. It's Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden, goveganradio.com. You can follow us on Twitter at Go Vegan Radio. Sing it, Howard Jones, you vegan artist, you. Vegan movement, you know, is a worldwide movement. We've interviewed people, you know, from all over the globe. And now, you know, of course, we want to take advantage because we're syndicated by the Genesis Communications Network, so we can make free long-distance calls to talk to guests. So I'm calling London today. And we're talking to Thomas Micklewright, who is a native of Birmingham, England, who attended the university in Leeds and has been involved with London Vegan Society's happening. And welcome, Thomas. How are you today?
Thank you. Yeah, very good. Thank you. Yourself?
Oh, pretty good. Doing all right. So,
doing your thing.
Yeah. Yep. Doing our thing, spreading the vegan message here and trying to reach as many people as possible. We've been broadcasting now on the radio for 12 years, and I would do the same thing with a megaphone on the street. This is, you know, the most important cause to me. And how is it that, you know, you're 25 years old in London? How were you affected to become a vegan yourself?
I was at university, and do you know of Jamie Oliver, the chef?
Yes.
Television chef from the UK. And he's quite honest, I think, about food, and showed little chicks being gassed live on television to show people the egg industry. He still uses eggs, but he wanted to show people, you know, the real food that they're using. And that just got me thinking, really. And from there, I watched YouTube videos, found out about the environment and the health benefits, and went veggie, and then a few months later went vegan.
Wonderful. So was that in London, or you were still...
That was in Leeds. That was about 5 years ago. And then moving down to London a year later, I moved to a place called Dulwich in southeast London. And because there wasn't any vegan or veggie things going on, I started my own group.
Ah. Well, when you decided to become a vegan in Leeds, and I believe that is the city where my grandmother was born.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Was it easy to become vegan? Did you have vegan foods readily available to you? Did people think you were crazy, or did they say...
I thought vegans were crazy themselves, actually. I remember being a veggie, because I was very new to it. I went straight from McDonald's and battery hen eggs straight to vegetarianism. The transition to vegan, it took a few months for us to decide. Me and my wife both went vegan at the same time. The shops in the UK label very well, and there was a number of veggie and vegan restaurants. We found the transition quite easy. As soon as we got our heads around, you know, what vegans eat.
Right. And when you went to London, you founded what organization was it?
That was the Dulwich Vegan Society. So that was just a small part in southeast London. And then April this year, I started the London Vegan Society. And so it was the idea of having a society like I had created in southeast London, but one for every borough of London. And there's about 300,000 people in each borough. So we've now got 32 societies with individual people, local people running their own groups.
So there are 32 boroughs in London.
Yeah.
Each one now has a vegan society.
Absolutely. And they all, you know, we have meetings and we do campaigns. So we come together on some issues, but other things that are more local, for instance. We have local people with local knowledge that are able to do local campaigns, network with local businesses and restaurants and cafes. So, yeah, it's going really well.
Mm. And from doing this, you think that it would be effective if there were strong grassroots vegan movements happening in capital cities of Western countries? Is that what you're thinking?
Yeah, I'm speaking to people in New York at the moment, and also looking to speak to people in Germany and Paris, and use the same sort of strategies and the same set method to set up groups across all the main cities. And I think splitting it down into your local area, how you can affect, you know, the people around you and the people in your town that you see every day is much easier than trying to tackle this big vegan and veggie question of the world. So if everyone plays their little part in their local town, it works well.
So kind of a grassroots movement toward that. Is New York still the capital of the U.S.? I'm trying to remember
No, it's not. But I think it's got a strong vegan scene.
Right, so you're saying like in the major Western cities to and New York has 5 boroughs, so we wouldn't have to have 32 societies.
I know,
right?
But they're big boroughs, aren't they? Like 1.2 million each, so
yeah,
have to break those down again into. I've been talking to people over there. I haven't been to New York yet, but I'd love to go. So see how you can break that down. I'm sure there's ways.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, isn't there a vegan society of the UK? I mean, even going back to the 1940s, or you know,
yeah, 1946 or 48, and started by Donald Watson. Yeah, the vegan society they call themselves.
Mm-hmm.
But they do have a world outlook.
Mm-hmm. So, and you're trying to take things to the local level.
Yeah, I mean, when you first go vegan, you're filled with such passion and energy. You try and tackle everything, don't you? But
mm-hmm.
you soon realise you've got to sort of break it down as to what you can actually achieve. And I think a local view is a good view to have.
Yeah.
If everyone plays their part locally, we'll all add up into the bigger picture.
So what is the local vegan scene in London? Many restaurants, people hanging out, a lot of activism. What?
Yeah, it's a real mix. There's quite a lot in the north. Loads of restaurants, loads of cafes, good shops, and there's some in south, sort of southeast London as well. Quite a few sort of cafes opening up, and also, for instance, vegan cupcake shops and things like that. It's getting popular, especially in the markets. But you've got other boroughs that don't really have anything at all. They really haven't been penetrated. And I suppose it depends the type of people that live there, if they're interested in vegan, veggie and healthy food. And in central London as well, there's a lot. But that's because there's a lot of business there. So, yeah, there's a good selection of places to eat.
Definitely. So, and what are some of the more popular restaurants or favorite restaurants?
Well, there's a whole mixture. There's places like Vanilla Black in Holborn in sort of central London, which is sort of fine dining, vegan and veggie. And then there's cafes like close to me in East Dulwich called the Blue Brick Cafe that do fantastic homemade vegan food. And then there's also Miss Cupcake as well in Brixton, who does brilliant vegan cupcakes. And I think a large percentage of our clientele aren't vegan or veggie, but they just love the cupcakes because they're just such good quality.
Mm-hmm. So what sort of activism are you engaging now?
So at the moment, our main sort of campaigns are meat-free Mondays or meat-free days. We think that's a great way of getting people on the track. You know, if you can get 10 people to do a meat-free day, you've made a massive difference compared to, you know, getting one person to go vegan.
Well, you know, now I'm I kind of feel like, you know, I've never really been that supportive of meat-free Mondays, other than, you know, unless we're saying, like, you know, you do have, your goal has to be the other 6 days of the week also. You can't engage in this horrible behavior. You know, I mean,
although I find a lot of people are more open to doing one day, and then you slowly climb them up the ladder to the top, obviously, vegan being.
But make the suggestion. Don't let them think that they're off the hook just by saying, okay, I'm going to do this one day a week, and I'm a good person, because, I mean, all dairy is rape, imprisonment, murder, so we got those other 6 days. So I guess if you're going to do the meatless Monday, I have to come to London and do the meatless Tuesday through Sunday or something, right?
Yeah, something like that. Well, I think you've got to catch people where they're at. I know when I was, if I ate meat, the idea of being vegan was just so out there, so hard to grasp. But I could probably get a meat-free Monday or fish-free Friday or something, so starting them slowly and working their way up.
Yeah. But you know something? I wish that somebody would have told me directly, you know, just lay it all out in front of me and you know, see if I can live with myself the other 6 days if I see, you know, like, hey, and especially in the British press, I mean, there's a lot about global warming and animal consumption. I mean, you know it there a lot better. Well, you have a more free press there, I think, than we do here. So, I mean, you hear a lot about global warming and animal consumption there, too, don't you?
We do, yeah, and it's mentioned, and things like the United Nations talking about people cutting down their meat intake and, you know, overpopulation. Mm-hmm. I just think people turn off to it. They think it's too much of a big issue that they themselves can't change.
Yeah, I like to give them credit because I feel like I did it, you know? I mean, it's like I ate meat every day of my life. I won a hamburger eating contest. Yeah. I never knew what a vegetarian was, you know?
Other things we've been doing against things like foie gras, the fatty duck livers, so trying to stop because there's still a number of restaurants and cafes that still serve foie gras in London. Mm-hmm. And we've had a number of restaurants and cafes stop serving them once we've explained you know, why we don't support it and why it's not a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then also soy milk as well. I think in the US, do you have more soy milk, more fake cheeses in restaurants and cafes?
We have a lot of that. Yes, we do.
Yeah, because in London, we have pretty much none of it. I think I know of one or two places that do fake cheese.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so that's another mission, getting the sort of covering the dairy. For both vegans and people, you know, lactose intolerance, just making it more of a known quantity.
So you don't have, like, the kind of alternative meat companies that we have here, the kind of tofurkeys and field roasts and
not as many, not as many. I think there's fake, sort of, fake burgers, fake sausages, you'll get those, but things like dairy... And a lot of cafes do soy milk, but you get charged extra for it. So it's not a standard because they say it's not cost effective for them to keep soy milk in-house. So they don't buy it as regularly. But I think the more people ask for it, the more they'll serve it and the more it become the norm.
Mm-hmm. You know, we had a foie gras ban that happened in California. It's really difficult sometimes with legislation because, you know, when the restaurant industry has a lot of money and therefore a lot of power.
Yeah.
We have to take a break. Can you stay with us a few more minutes, Thomas?
Yeah,
okay, we're talking to Thomas Micklewright of the London Vegan Societies on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. You can be my friend on Facebook. Try to get on the Bob Linden page or actually preferably the Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden since the Bob Linden pages are maxed out. And follow us on Twitter at Go Vegan Radio. It's Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden, goveganradio.com. The music you hear behind me, The Smiths with the song Meat is Murder, and that's why we are vegans. We don't want to be complicit in murder. And vegan food is better. It tastes better, it's healthier, and it's good for the environment. Today we're talking to Thomas Micklewright of the London Vegan Societies, and Thomas... A little while ago, we were talking about how there seems to be a lack of vegan cheese and vegan meats or meat alternatives in London or the UK. I had a great guest on my show last week, Miyoko Shinner. So I'm going to advise you to go to her website, which you can just go to miyoko.com, M-I-Y-O-K-O, miyoko.com. She has a book called Artisan Vegan Cheese. So whoever is the first one to get that book in London will be one of the richest people in the near future from, you know, selling the cheese, I'm sure. And she also created something called the Unturkey many years ago for, you know, that was a Thanksgiving favorite. And that recipe is also on the website. There are many recipes there. So let's veganize London there, Thomas.
Absolutely.
Yeah. We were mentioning mentioning also some of the campaigns, and I don't know, maybe you'll hang up on me or we'll, you know, benefit from, you know, some of the experience happening here. But we did have an anti-foie gras campaign in California, and, you know, that passed, the law passed.
Yeah,
and then
yeah.
the authorities said they're not going to enforce it. So, you know, there wasn't going to be enforcement. That's what happens very often when those in power, you know, can influence and you know, the restaurants. And then the restaurants said, okay, well, we won't have foie gras on the menu. You can buy a cracker for $20, wink, wink, and, you know, you get something on the side, which happens to be foie gras. So people get around that, and then I get concerned that we missed giving the vegan message along the way, too. Like, okay, it's great to tell people how cruel and awful foie gras is, but all meat and dairy are cruel, and, you know, eventually our goal is we're a vegan society. We want everybody to be vegan, right?
Yeah, I agree. I think those sticking points like foie gras are most shocking to sort of meat eaters a lot more than sort of killing a cow for a burger. But yeah, I think it's opening people's minds to show them everything they eat, all the animal products they eat, and especially milk and eggs have a terrible industry behind them, because obviously linked with the milk and the eggs are the baby animals that get killed in their millions.
Mm-hmm. And I would presume people in England are concerned about their health and heart disease, cancer, stroke, diabetes. I mean, that's...
Yeah,
you know.
Definitely. I know a lot of people give up meat or reduce their dairy intake because of health. I think environment and health are the two key issues for non-veggies and vegans to be sort of interested in cutting down their animal products. Animal welfare, not so much... they probably would have done it already from sort of childhood and sort of early teens. But definitely when they get older, they think about health and they think about the environment.
Mm-hmm. And I don't know, I know you mentioned the UN report earlier. The UN report on climate change said that animal agriculture was responsible for 18% of all greenhouse gas emissions, which in itself would be higher than all transportation combined.
Yeah.
But that study was analyzed by the World Watch Institute, which said that was grossly underestimated, and that animal agriculture is responsible for 51% of
really?
All greenhouse. Yes. So I definitely look at climate change and animal agriculture, and that's a much more credible report. It analyzes the UN report, you know, which was a very conservative one.
Yeah.
You know? So, how about that vote? I can't believe this week that your parliament decided not to join the U.S. You know, we're usually twins when it comes to going to war for no good reason.
And now the end of this special relationship, isn't it?
Yeah, very surprising and gratifying to see that it could actually happen, too. So it's hard to be, you know, vegans for bombing.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, Thomas, we have maybe a minute or so left. I just wonder if there's anything you wanted to talk about related to the London Vegan Societies and what's going on there that we haven't addressed, how people can get in touch with you and become involved.
Yeah, definitely. Two things. The first, we're doing a big vegan count at the moment. So if you just type into Google big vegan count, you'll find the web address either on London Vegan Societies or... All Animal Vegan, which is done by started by Holly Piggott, and we've currently counted over 20,000 vegans, and
great.
We're counting across the world. But obviously, we're looking for London-based vegans.
Okay.
So if anyone listening to this,
just about
a little over a year ago,
and greetings once again. Welcome to Hour 2 of Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. Yes, at the request of the Genesis Communications Network, we have expanded to 2 hours weekly, live from 5 to 7 p.m. Pacific Time on Sundays. You can click Listen Live at GoVeganRadio.com, where there are hundreds of archives that you can hear, all with the purpose of getting you, yes, you, to go vegan. Maybe my next guest will. Kathy Stevens is the founder and director of the Catskill Animal Sanctuary. Kathy spent her childhood on a Virginia horse farm, and then she moved to Boston for graduate school. And after teaching high school English for 10 years, she was asked to become a principal of a school, but did something else instead. And we'll talk to Kathy about what that something else is. Hi, Kathy. How are you today?
Hey, Bob. What on earth was she thinking? Thanks for having me on.
Well, thank you for being with us today. Well, what on earth were you thinking when you, it looks like you had a fairly normal life, an English teacher. How did you become vegan?
Well, you know what? Actually, that came after the decision. I was, after a decade of having taught high school English, I was invited to become the principal of a new charter high school opening in Boston, and it was a media and technology high school, not my thing. And so I turned down the job, and I thought, well, good Lord, well, you know, I'd always imagined that I'd be in the public school system trying to implement change sort of from the ground up. So I suddenly realized I was done, and I thought, what do I want to do for the next 30 years? You know, and how do I want to contribute? And what came to me is that there had to be a way to combine a love, really a reverence for animals, having grown up on a farm in the South, with my passion for teaching and learning, particularly around social justice issues, and sort of my passion for using education to transform. And so Catskill Animal Sanctuary, way back in 2001, came about as the result of a marriage of those two passions. And then the vegan piece came. I was vegetarian and not vegan when I started CAS, but pretty, you know, sort of moving in the vegan direction, but then kind of watched a couple films and realized, oh, this dairy thing really just doesn't work.
Right. So, if you're doing it for compassionate reasons, as Cesar Chavez said, you get rid of dairy and eggs first, really, if you really find out about what's going on behind the scenes. But it's pretty well hidden from us. So, you know, we're talking to Kathy Stevens. She's the author of two books, Where the Blind Horse Sings, and her latest is Animal Camp, Reflections on a Decade of Love, Hope, and Veganism at Catskill Animal Sanctuary, revised and expanded. I love it that you have the V word on the cover.
I insisted on the V word, and it was a big deal with the publisher. The original of the book was published in 2010, and when they said they wanted to do a paperback about a year ago, they said, let's do a paperback. And I said, oh, you know, this is pretty dated. A lot has happened at Catskill Animal Sanctuary since 2010, and much more important, our attitude towards veganism as a country and a culture have changed, as you know and your listeners know, a hell of a lot in the last 3 years. So they let me do a revision, and I took out 10 sort of dated chapters, put in 10 new chapters, new prologue, new epilogue, and put the V word on the front.
That's great. Yeah, when I started the radio show 12 years ago, there were people saying, call it Go Veggie. Don't use the word, is too radical. No, the word is vegan. The word is vegan. So, you know, it's what says it all. You know, you say veggie these days or vegetarian, you know, you could have a cheese omelet and a glass of milk. It doesn't make sense, you know. So,
and in some people's minds, you could have fried fish.
Right.
I mean, I don't know if that's still the case on the West Coast, but out here, in progressive New York, a lot of people will say, I'm vegetarian, I only eat fish. I met somebody today who said that exact same thing. Mm-hmm. So we got some work to do.
Well, they're getting a lot of excuses between humane meat and people saying, oh, you can be vegan before 6, but after 6, eat meat. You know, it's a crazy world. But, I mean, if we want to be kind to the animals all the time and ourselves, our health and the environment, we are vegan 24/7. So
right.
So that's interesting that you started the Catskill Animal Sanctuary and then became vegan. So tell us about your experiences there with those who have been living there.
Well, those who have been living here have absolutely changed my life. I am preparing for, I'm doing a keynote at the Toronto Vegetarian Festival this coming Friday, and in preparing my talk over the last few days, I was I've been thinking a lot about this, and I have arrived at a place where what I'm about to say is no longer theoretical. I know that it's true. And so our challenge as an organization is how best to convey what we now know to be true. And what we know is this. I know that in ways that matter, we are all the same. And I'm talking about human beings and chickens and dogs and pigs. This concept of difference has been used by the powerful to divide us and to suppress the powerless. And there's no place where that's more apparent than in our exploitation across the board of all non-human species. And yet when we live among these animals, and so we know these animals as most people only know their children or their companion animals, if there's people who know their companion animals especially well. And so, for instance, everybody knows that pigs are exceedingly bright, but I don't think that comment is real to people unless, you know, or reading the statements about how pigs have the intelligence of 4-year-old children. I don't think that really means anything to people who haven't had the experience of being around, not confined pigs, but pigs who have the ability to make choices about how they want to spend their time. And when you're around pigs who can do that, then they are really a force to be reckoned with. You know, we also believe, and we're not the only sanctuary who believes this either, that pigs laugh.
Mm.
And so we know this to be true. Like, many of your listeners know that their dogs, their companion animals, have incredibly diverse personalities, and the way we say it is that 10 chickens are as different as 10 human beings. You know, they're universal things that make us human or make them chickens. But beyond that, it's we humans who have this ridiculous, you know, it's a mouthful, this word, but this anthropocentric view of the world where we define everything through a human lens. And how haughty of us that we find it, you know, that when animals share in common with us respiratory systems, circulatory systems, reproductive systems, similar organs, nervous systems, skeletal systems, etc. They share all of that, and yet we debate whether or not they have emotional lives. It boggles the mind, and because I live among them and know them in the way that most people only know their kids, as all sanctuary people do, then that statement that we're all the same in the ways that matter, we're the same, is as true as saying the sky is blue. So that is what? That's the big aha. That's the big thing I've learned from them in this work over the last 12 years.
So everyone is seeking joy and wants to avoid sadness and pain, and they're happy. I think that we can look at the dogs who are our companion animals, and we can tell when they seem to be smiling and happy.
Yes.
Or and you have that experience with other species who aren't normally our companion animals. I mean, I had the good fortune of babysitting or watching a chicken for a while, and she's very smart. You know, I call her name, she comes running around the corner, and she comes through the house, comes up on the bed. You know, it's just really, you know, just a real sweetheart, you know. So who has affected you there? Which animal?
My.
I'm sure they all have. I mean, there have been thousands there. And where is the Catskill Animal Sanctuary? Where is it exactly?
It's in upstate New York, 2 hours north of Manhattan, off of the thruway, in a little town. We're in the Catskill watershed, a little town called Saugerties.
Okay. I used to go for summers in Monticello and Ellenville and Kerhonkson, if I'm remembering
of
the names.
When we first set up on a borrowed piece of property, it was in Kerhonkson. Kerhonkson's about 40 minutes south, right down 209.
Kathy, we have to take a break. We're talking to Kathy Stevens. We'll continue on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden, goveganradio.com. If you want to email me, if you want to advertise, be a sponsor, bob@goveganradio.com.
I have.
It's Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden, goveganradio.com. Follow us on Twitter at Go Vegan Radio. If you have missed any of our discussion with Kathy Stevens or Thomas Micklewright of the London Vegan Society, well, the program is archived at goveganradio.com. Also, I think I cut Thomas off right when he was going to tell you the website, which is londonvegansociety.com, londonvegansociety.com. And just want you to check the website of the San Francisco Vegetarian Society, sfvs.org, for information on the Great World Veg Festival coming up on Saturday and Sunday, September 28th and 29th at Golden Gate Park, the County Fair Building. I am honored to emcee the event this year. I speak Saturday morning at 10:30, and admission is free up until then because who's going to pay to see me, right? So come on out there to Golden Gate Park, and the information is at sfes.org, 14th annual. So, Kathy, we have maybe 2, 3, 4 minutes left, and then we'll have animal rights commentary with Professor Gary Francione. I wanted to get to anything you wanted to mention about your book and the Catskill Animal Sanctuary. I think you have an event coming up also that you may want to mention.
Catskill Animal Sanctuary is a rescue, but the second half of our mission, like yours, is to create more vegans. And to that end, we have a wonderful compassionate cuisine program with courses through the season, and we just loaded up a bunch more courses for the fall. We have a beautiful 200-year-old farmhouse right on site, and we do have a wonderful event called the Shindig coming up with Victoria Moran as our headliner, and tours and animal talks all day long. That's on Saturday, October 5th. I'm also interested. I've just been, if I have, you know what, I'm afraid I'm going to run out of time. I've just been really thinking a lot about Gary Francione's contention that in this work that we do, the only thing that matters is not how like us the animals are, whether they're intelligent or not, but this whole issue of suffering. And where I differ with him, I think he's extraordinary. Where I differ with him is that, yes, that is the only thing that should matter in a perfect world. But in a world in which we were all evolved beings, but in my view, the more we can help people see the similarities among all species, the more vegans we're going to create. So that's just a little bit I've been thinking about in terms of Gary and his wonderful work in the last few days.
Mm-hmm.
Just wanted to throw that in because he's going to be on with you.
Great, great. Well, thanks. I appreciate that. And people, how do people get your book, Animal Camp, Reflections on a Decade of Love, Hope, and Veganism at Catskill Animal Sanctuary?
It's on Amazon, or it's on our website. If they get it from our website, which is casanctuary.org, then 100% of the profits go to support our work.
C-A Animal Sanctuary.
C for Catskill, A for Animal, casanctuary.org.
casanctuary.org. Thank you for being with us, Kathy. And I think all your grammar was correct today as an English teacher, you know, so it was like, that's something.
Thanks, I was a little anxious about that. I think yours was too.
You know,
I think yours was too.
You know, well, I thought I was going to be an English teacher, then I became a disc jockey and an animal rights activist, and I don't know what happened to me, but, you know, I keep thinking, okay, the pronoun must agree with the antecedent. So when I say something,
you know,
like,
what?
Yeah.
Yeah, but Bob, it informs how you speak, how you think, so it's all good because you've got to, you know, we've all got to be effective communicators, so it didn't go to waste.
I enjoy diagramming sentences. I'm the one in class who actually...
I loved it. Eighth grade.
Conjugating verbs, it's great. You know? So then when I write something crazy, like, forgive, you know, I'll say something like, HSUS is butchers. And everybody says to me, what's wrong with your grammar? No, I have the subject and verb correct there. So I'm sorry, I got it right.
Right.
You know, I don't know. So anyway, well, thank you. I'll go from one English professor, English teacher, to professor. Thanks for being with us today, Kathy.
Thank you so much. Great show, and thanks for the opportunity, Bob.
Okay,
bye.
I enjoyed having you. Thanks, and so thank you so much for the great work you do with all the rescues at the Catskill Animal Sanctuary. It's Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden, and now it is time for Animal Rights Commentary with Professor Gary Francione, whose website is abolitionistapproach.com. I know, Gary, while we spent a few more minutes talking with Kathy, you probably were watching your Breaking Bad, trying to catch every minute that you could there.
No, I actually don't watch it. I'll watch it at midnight because I don't like it to be interrupted. It's a sacred event, Bob. let me ask you, I heard the tail end of that. What was she, I'm sorry, what was Kathy disagreeing with me on? I wasn't quite sure what she was saying.
Well, I don't know that there was much disagreement. I mean, she said that, you know, it's their ability to suffer but she's saying she likes to emphasize how much they are like us too. So,
I think she's talking about my views about we ought not to distinguish animal. You know, we ought not to privilege certain animals like chimpanzees or elephants or dolphins because we perceive them to be more like us. I mean, I think, you know, I think I've explained before, I think the reason that that's a bad idea is because, you know, to the extent that you condition the moral status of animals on their being like us, so many of the animals that we exploit are going to be outside of that scope. So we might end up saying that, well, chimpanzees or orangutans or elephants are more morally important. But what about chickens? And that's the animal that we exploit most, and they're considered to be, quote, dumb, end quote. Now, I don't think they are, but even if they were, what difference would it make? And so that's why, I mean, I take that position. But how are you?
She was saying that chickens are like us, too. I mean, she was relating just to, you know, we're all in this together. I don't know. You know, I'm doing fine. You know, I was interviewed by AR Zone, some of your favorite people. Now they're not going to post it because you know, it was a little controversial, like you were saying. One of the hosts there, Tim Gear, seemed to be saying that he supported the use of mice as opposed to chimpanzees in vivisection because there's going to be vivisection anyway. So I took a few positions that, you know, I thought some of the things he said were ridiculous, that animals don't feel pain or whatever. So, you know, I guess your insult won't get posted either, because now he hung up the phone on me when we did the interview, and now they refuse to even post it. So,
you know, look, the internet is great, Bob. I mean, it's democratized knowledge, and it's done a great many good things. The problem is that the internet now makes people like that think that they have something important to say because they have an internet connection. That's unfortunate, because it happens to be untrue. But in any event, look, that's the world we live in. Where we live this week. Hey, did you see the exciting news this week? A lot of the people in the movement were very excited to report that McDonald's is going to have a non-vegan, dairy-laden wrap, but it's apparently going to be meatless. So we've been being told by various people, including Vegan Outreach, that this is a great step in the right direction. This is
I did make comment on Veg News putting out the announcement that McDonald's Canada, right, are we talking about the two new wraps up there?
No, I'm talking about the wrap that I heard about from Non-Vegan Outreach. I don't know it. I don't believe it. Well, look, Vegan Outreach is to veganism what National Socialism was to socialism in Germany in the 1930s. But
well, Veg News had the announcement too, and
oh, did they?
And I'm looking at it, and I say, well, one has feta cheese and a creamy sauce, and the other has cheddar and Monterey Jack. Why does Veg News care about new animal products being, you know, introduced by McDonald's?
Why? I mean, look, I frankly, if it were vegan and McDonald's, I mean, I, you know, however you draw your lines, my view is McDonald's is on the other side. But this is not even vegan, and we've got Veg News and Non-Vegan Outreach telling us all about it. It just doesn't make any sense. But anyway, now, are we going to go to a break now, or do I have time to do this little bit here?
Let me see, Shane, let me see, how much time do we have till the break? We have about 2 minutes to the break, and then we'll have another 5 minutes after that, so we can get started with the best 2-minute introduction to what you want to say for 4 or 5 minutes after that.
All right. Well, what I'm going to do tonight is, Anna Charlton and I have this new book out, Eat Like You Care, An Examination of the Morality of Eating Animals. And what we do in the book is we talk about, you know, the first part of the book basically says, if you examine what you really, you know, if you examine our conventional wisdom about animals and what most of us believe, really what we already believe should lead us in the direction of going vegan. That is, we all believe that it's wrong to inflict unnecessary suffering and death on animals. Whatever necessity includes, it must, if it's going to be a coherent concept, exclude the consumption of animal products for pleasure, amusement, or convenience, or the infliction of suffering and death for reasons of pleasure, amusement, or convenience. But yet, that's the only explanation. And that's why we get upset, by the way, with Michael Vick, because he inflicted suffering and death on animals, and he didn't have a good reason. His pleasure, his enjoyment for watching dog fighting was not a sufficient reason. And so what we argue in the book is that the same thing can be said about our consuming animals. It's the same problem. That, you know, none of us need to eat animals to lead an optimally healthy life. And indeed, animal agriculture is an ecological disaster. The best justification we have for killing 57, 58 billion animals, land animals a year, not counting aquatic animals where you've got at least probably that number, probably larger, closer to a trillion. You know, you're talking about it's a huge number of animals. What's the best justification we have for that? Best justification we have is they taste good. So really, how are we any different from Michael Vick? And what we conclude in the first part of the book is that we're not. But that really, you know, if we followed what we believed, we would all be eating an exclusively plant-based diet, a vegan diet. And then what we do is we go on in the rest of the book to examine the buts. We have the but section where we talk about the various excuses people give for why they're continuing to eat animal products. And so I want to read a portion of the book about plants, Bob, about, you know, what happens at that magic moment when somebody says, but plants.
Plants rights. Oh, the plants rights
plants
activists.
Rights.
Here they
I
come.
Love plants rights.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. More with Gary Francione coming up. It's Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. GoVeganRadio.com. Ah, sounds like my old jazzy 100 Washington, D.C. days prior to my animal rights activism. Thanks for support from Kim Sheridan, author of the heartwarming, award-winning book Animals and the Afterlife. Visit animalsandtheafterlife.com. And also, you want to avoid yucky animal ingredients, J-E-L-L, no. You want Cool Cups for the kids. So Cool Cups are natural gels available in three delicious flavors, orange, peach mango, and black cherry. The kids will love them. GMO-free, 100% vegan, and naturally low in calories. You can pick up Cool Cups at Viva La Vegan Grocery. Also go to cool-cups.net/gelatin and Viva La Vegan Grocery, 9456 Robert Street, Rancho Cucamonga. You can order anything online at VivaLaVeganGrocery.com and listen for my commentary on KPFA in the Bay Area, KPFA.org, 94.1 FM, Wednesday mornings in the 8 a.m. hour on the Morning Mix. It's a vegan animal liberation commentary with Bob Linden. And then on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden, it's animal rights commentary with Professor Gary Francione. Here he is now. Gary.
Hi, Bob.
Hi.
anyway, so what I'm going to do is discuss one of the butts in our book, Eat Like You Care, and this butt has to do with plants. Now, this is one we all get. Everybody who's been a vegan for more
plants
than 5 minutes.
Plants have feelings, too.
I mean, it's just, you know, and what's really remarkable is It's the silliest sort of objection you can imagine, but next to the "but wasn't Hitler a vegetarian," which I must have gotten 5,000 times in my life, including from reasonably intelligent people. But wasn't Hitler a vegetarian? I always point out, no, he wasn't. Even if he was, he was not a vegan. And what difference does it make anyway? Because Stalin ate a lot of meat. What conclusions can you draw? In any event, all right, here it is. But what about plants? The scene: we are at a dinner party. We are minding our business eating our vegan meal. Someone asks why we are not eating the meat and dairy products that others are eating. They ask if it's about health. We say no, it's about ethics. And almost immediately, but what about plants? This but is often fitted to the particular plant food we happen to be eating. For example, but what about that broccoli you're eating? Wasn't it in pain when it was cooked? Next to but Hitler, this but is the silliest of all buts. No one really thinks that plants are the same as animals. If someone ate your tomato and your dog, no one would regard those as similar acts. Let's be clear here. There is no scientific evidence that plants think or exhibit any sort of mental activity so that we can say that plants have interests. There is no scientific evidence that plants have any sort of mind that prefers or desires or wants anything. There is no scientific evidence that dropping broccoli into boiling water is in any way relevant to slaughtering a cow or pig or chicken or dropping a live lobster into boiling water. We we could present a discussion about botany here, but it's not really necessary, as no one really maintains that plants are sentient and can experience pain, or that they have perceptual awareness of anything. The concern about plants got its start in 1973, when a journalist and writer who focused on alternative science wrote The Secret Life of Plants, based on the discredited experiments of, among others, Cleve Baxter. Baxter was originally an interrogation specialist for the Central Intelligence Agency, and in 1968 published a paper in the International Journal of Parapsychology claiming that plants had thoughts and emotions and could read human minds. But wait, in his 2012 book, What a Plant Knows, A Field Guide to the Senses, Tel Aviv University scientist Daniel Humowitz reports that plants can see, smell, think, and feel. He's a recognized scientist, and he seems to say we're wrong, right? Wrong. Scientific American interviewed Humowitz and asked him point blank, would you say then that plants think? He replied, no, I wouldn't. He added, quote, just as a plant can't suffer subjective pain in the absence of a brain, I also don't think it thinks. Humowitz and people like philosopher Michael Martyr, who in his 2013 book, Plant Thinking, A Philosophy of Vegetal Life, defends plant ethics, points to instances in which plants react to stimuli. No one doubts that they react to stimuli. They are alive. They conduct various activities, some of which are very complex at the cellular level. But they conduct nothing at a cognitive or consciousness level because they lack consciousness and cognition altogether. Plants react. They don't respond. I guess I'm not going to be able to finish this up.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
All right. You know what? We'll return to plants next week and do something else.
That's great. Okay. Yeah, I mean...
Just remember, everybody, remember, plants react. They don't respond. The book is Eat Like You Care. You can go to eatlikeyoucarebook.com and check the book out.
Okay. Thanks, Gary. GoVeganRadio.com, the archive.